Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
And if you're sitting there facing retirement, what are those things you're most worried about? In today's program, we're going to look at a study that the Stanford Center on Longevity did that addresses some of these very things.
We're going to talk about the five things that people just like yourself worry about and try to solve these issues before they go into retirement.
So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today as we talk about financial matters, money issues, and take your calls, answer questions, and our main objective is to help you make some wise choices with your finances. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people like yourself during the weekends, and we come here on the weekdays. We meet with people during the
weekdays. We come here on the weekends.
Thank you for the clarification there, Pat. And
we meet with people similar to you.
Yeah.
Normally people that the average person that comes into our
office, I guess the point is that
is over age 50. We're trying to make you comfortable enough to call into our radio show.
There we go. Thank you.
That's
in fact,
the point.
We're still practicing advisors, fee-based advisors.
We meet with people. We solve real-life problems. Yeah. We give our advice. Sometimes it's taken. Sometimes it's not. But
completely
we give it nonetheless.
Ignored at other times.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. But if you want to join the program and you've got a question for us, always a good way, frankly, to get some, particularly if you don't know where to go, to get some financial advice. Or if you're wondering if you're being sold something and you want another opinion on things. Then. So to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, simply dial 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. But before we go to the calls, we've got this program today, we're going to spend a bit of time on a study, Stanford Center for Longevity. They're one of the world-renowned centers that has done study on aging and retirement and those things.
They're known actually for quite a few things.
The Center on Longevity is?
No, Stanford.
I was referring to the Stanford Center on Longevity. I understand Stanford's known for a lot of things.
Couple things. But the Center for Longevity is as respected as any.
Yes.
What's the group out of Boston? Was it Boston College?
Yes, Boston College has a Center for Retirement something.
Studies, something like that.
Retirements. I should know the name because we've done a lot.
We've interviewed them on their show a couple times.
Yes, and we've done some.
The director, we've done some work with them.
And my son goes to school out there at Boston College, too.
Is he?
Although he got in a little disciplinary issue, but that's another matter for another show.
We're going to have to talk about Scott's kids' issues off the air. Well, they're good teenagers, aren't they?
I think he's 20 now. It's funny how when they're, I find myself being accepting of certain things that when my kids were 12, there was no way I would have ever thought I'd be accepting of. But you learned that there's things you control and can't control.
Yeah, and you get used to them. I remember I was talking to a friend. He had married a lady that had two teenagers. And he said to me, man, I can't believe these teenagers. They do this and this and this. And I said, you know, those teenagers are pretty normal. You just didn't have 14 years to get used
that's
to
right.
them.
No kidding.
Anyway, that's the difference.
The thing that if you've listened to this program for any length of time, you know that we tend to get off on tangents on things that we find interesting.
But today we're going to talk about the Stanford study.
And we'll take calls, of course. But they did a study with Society of Actuaries. And how do you know a extrovert actuary when you meet them? They stare at your shoes while they're talking to you. So they get...
That's a joke. For those of you that missed it, that is Scott Hanson's attempt at humor.
Okay. How many actuary jokes do you know?
Oh, I know tons.
Okay.
I do a whole bit on actuaries.
We had a guy years ago who worked for us that did stand-up. He was in our trading department thing. He did stand-up comedy on the side. And I was kind of wondering about going. It's like, what does he rip on his employer? You know, I got this little guy who, anyway. Here's the study they did. And this study looked at the
his
most.
His name was Chris Reynolds. I wonder if he's a famous comedian now.
Well, if you have to wonder, that might answer your question.
Yes, that's a good point.
So, I mean, it's not Chris Rock.
Okay. He can't be that famous. No. Although I'm not into the comedian.
I'm not either. No. I found I turned on the channel the other day, and I didn't recognize any of the names. I don't know the channel.
The channel? What is it, 1962? did you adjust the rabbit ears? To get the channel. So back to the Stanford Center on Longevity and the Society of Actuaries. They conducted a study.
We've said that. What it looked at is, what are the most important decisions for older, middle-income workers? So these aren't, you know, if you've got $20 million, maybe not your most important decisions. But this is for middle-income workers. They defined middle-income workers as people with less than $1 million in retirement savings. But I think if you've got $1 million or $1.2 million or something, you're probably in the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Particularly in California or other high expensive states. So the number one thing they said is deciding when to leave the paid workforce and whether to work part-time for a period until full retirement. So do I leave cold turkey?
Do I go out part-time? Do I do some contracting on the way out? And in fact, it almost goes without saying that if you retire before the age of 60 in today's world, that you would consider going back to work.
But we're seeing, well, 2/3 of baby boomers say they want to do some sort of work as they go into retirement. And we've seen a number of people here at Hanson McLean that we've worked with that have kind of done a phased-in retirement.
Yeah.
And they've got the financial resources. Sometimes we've seen with the financial resources.
Sometimes they just need a little bit of before Social Security or a pension kicks in. And sometimes it's just to fill the day. It's just to fill the day. Or that they don't really want to retire. They just want more control over their schedule.
And I think you say fill the day. It's not so much filling the day. They find something else where they can add value, feel a sense of purpose, have a sense of purpose.
And can interact with people.
Yeah.
Talk to a guy that retired when he was 52, 53. I said,
And how old are you today?
I'm 55.
Okay.
So I said, what are you going to do? He said, I think I'm going to have to go back to work. There's no one to play with. So what do you mean? He said, you know how like on the weekends you can call friends and you go for a bike ride or snow skiing or whatever? He said, I'm the only one that's my age that's retired. He said, I can find plenty of 65 and 70-year-olds to play with. I'm 52. So I said, you know, why did you retire? He said, well, because, you know, they offered me a package. I had never really thought of it. I had enough money. But now it's not about the money. It's about, you know, the purpose, filling the day, the social interactions.
And so he went back to work?
He was looking for a job to go back to work, something that he wanted to really, something that didn't, the money wasn't as relevant as the activity.
Look, at Hanson McLean, we think it's important for people to be in a position that they can retire and be financially independent. And, you know, that's an important place to get to in life, considering that about half of us are forced into retirement because of a health issue or a change in job. So it's important that we've got be in a position so that work is an option and not an obligation. But I think more and more we're seeing, particularly with baby boomers, we're seeing people looking at
phased in,
some sort of phased in
gig work.
And perhaps as we continue, the economy continues to evolve the next couple of years, particularly with unemployment as low as it is, and so many 10,000 baby boomers hitting 65 every day, we might see some more changes within the workforce.
Yeah, and the technology is actually making it easier to work remotely.
Completely.
Yeah. Versus 10 or 15 years ago, just the file sharing capabilities.
With things like Dropbox and Google Hangout and all these other tools that I somehow learned how to use because I was
because you wanted more flexibility in your schedule.
Yes,
or you were forced to by the younger people you work with.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, or the older people. Come on. Anyway, we're going to spend a little bit of time on this study today. But of course, we're going to take calls. And if you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Again, that number is 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to Dave in Roseville. Dave, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, I've got a question on retirement, what to do with my home. I'm single, 63 years old. My home mortgage would pay off in August. I'm planning to retire when I'm 66, and I'd like to buy a new retirement home in a community in Reno that's a over 55 community. It's going to cost probably $425 or more. I'm trying to decide whether to sell my current home and use the proceeds to purchase a new retirement home,
okay,
or instead rent out my home and, you know, pay off the mortgage with the rent proceeds.
What's your home in Roseville worth today?
Probably about $400,000.
All right, so it's pretty much an even
swap. It's a lateral move.
Yeah, right.
And you said you're going to do this in 3 years at age 66?
Correct.
All right. So if you sold your home here and bought one in Reno immediately, and to the rest of the listeners, where Dave lives into where he wants to move is about
two-hour drive,
but it's over the Sierra Nevada mountain range. So it's not always parts of the year it could get difficult to cross. So if you sold it, the home
well, he's
here,
not thinking he's. So are you thinking about selling your house in California now?
No, I want to stay here as long. I'll keep working until I retire, and then I was trying to decide whether to sell it then.
Oh,
here's the challenge. And here you're looking at a long-term investment on a short-term time frame, right? So you're looking at
right.
3 years out, and that's why you're calling the program, right? You're looking at three
yeah.
years out, and it's anyone's guess where the real estate market's going to be in 3 years, just like it's anyone's guess where the stock market's going to be in 3 years. So there's the chance that in 3 years from now, I mean, the worst thing that could happen is in 3 years from now, California home prices are down and Nevada prices are up because there's a lot of people like Dave saying, I've had it, the new tax law, it's even worse for me to stay in California, I'm out of here.
Yep.
Right? So,
exactly.
Yeah, and that's a real...
So you've got a number of different
From the least risky standpoint, you might not want to do this, but the least risky standpoint would be to sell your house in California now, rent something for a couple of years, buy the house in Nevada now.
And rent that out for a couple of years. That's the least risk.
That's going to give you the highest probability of an outcome for that you're desiring for retirement.
Because,
but it's uncomfortable for you for the next 3 years.
Correct. And the reason you do that, why we know that the outcome is, here's the two risks. The two risks are you don't find a place to rent here in the Sacramento area, or you're unable to rent out your home that you purchased in Reno. But you essentially make the move today with the asset, and you make your life living situation a little bit more uncomfortable for the next couple years.
Now, the other option of going and buying a house today was what you're considering, right?
And keeping your existing
yes.
home?
What other
Correct.
What other assets do you have?
Well, I've got I'll have about $650 in 401k and IRAs, about that. And then when I retire, I have maybe a pension of $30,000 maybe.
And Social Security as well?
Correct.
I wouldn't know.
You what?
I would not do it. I wouldn't buy a house there now. And
so the challenge is if you went and bought a house now you've got, you're probably going to have to, you need to come up with some money for the down payment.
Yeah.
$80,000 or so.
That.
You've got 80.
Yeah.
How much do you have in cash?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't have that much in cash. I have maybe $30,000 in cash.
Like, do you have any money outside of the IRAs?
401ks?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so the challenge, you'd have a tax. You definitely don't want to pull money out of your retirement account for the down payment because the taxes would kill you.
So right. I wouldn't.
And considering that you're going to be pulling, withdrawing in Nevada where there's no income state income taxes, the last thing you want to do is take money out of your retirement.
So account. I wouldn't buy. I would not. I would personally would not buy a house up there and rent it for 2 or 3 years with the hope that you're going to sell a house in California and then pay that off because you don't know whether you're buying at a high there or not. We have no idea.
Right.
And yeah. It doesn't take, we don't have to go back too far in history.
I know. We've seen people
see this all the time.
Had you done this in 2005,
six, seven,
it would have, you would have been in a world of hurt.
So,
right,
what I would do is do nothing and hope that these property values track pretty similarly, which they have historically. If you look at the property values over the last 20 years in the Reno, Tahoe area, they have historically stayed pretty close. They haven't diverged too much from those in the Sacramento area. They've diverged significantly from those in the Bay Area. The Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, lives in its own little island down there, mostly fueled by the tech bubble. I would do nothing until I actually made the move and hope that those houses continue to track on the same level. Or I would sell now, buy now, and rent and rent. I'd rent one out and I'd rent to live. That's the the renting would give you the greatest probability of success.
Yeah. Yep.
But staying.
You gotta ask. So yeah, kind of in looking at risk trade-offs, that's your least risky. The second would be
just do nothing.
To do nothing.
That's,
and the third would be to buy another house there.
Yes.
The challenge there is you've got, to make it work, you'd probably have to go into debt on your house here today, which is just about paid off, and you'd be in debt on the house there.
And the whole dang thing could blow up on you.
Yeah.
Like, big. And you're 63, and you're a pretty good planner, and you've got $650,000 saved, $30,000 plus pension. You retire at age 65, 66, and you're single? Come on.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't jeopardize it.
Yeah. You show up in Reno.
Yeah, the
over 55 community. Dave, you got it going on.
Okay, Dave, appreciate the
call.
Thanks
so much. All right, appreciate your help.
Yeah, this is always a challenge where you know it's just don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah,
and it's
I know what I would do.
Yeah, yeah, and as you said, you don't have to go back that far in history to remember.
No. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And continue with the calls. Let's go to Denver. Talk with Claudia. Claudia, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Claudia.
I have a question regarding. I have a question regarding life insurance.
Okay.
You guys talk about that. I'm 55. I have about $1.8 million in assets, and that's split half tax deferred and half taxable.
Okay.
I'm debt-free. I have this old life insurance policy. I paid about $12,000 for it over the course of 12 years, $1,000 premium. And the cash value right now is $46,000. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I don't have any heirs, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't
mm-hmm.
I just pull that out?
You put in $12,000, it's worth $46,000?
Yeah, but that was over. I
know, but
yeah,
still, that is. Normally, we hear things like, "I put in $12,000; it's worth $200,000."
Were you put in $12,000? Did you make any subsequent contributions to that?
No, it was just over a 12-year period, $1,000 per year, and that started in 1989. So it's been sitting there.
Okay. Oh, got it.
We're thinking the last 12 years.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whoa,
we're like, what magic beans did? You have.
And is this a variable life insurance policy, or is this a whole life? What kind of policy is it?
It's a whole life.
And what does it have, a guaranteed minimum income or a
whole
guarantee,
life,
like 3% or 4% on the fixed account?
No, it doesn't.
Have you calculated, so you have made payments, have you calculated the increase in the cash value the last couple of years, what kind of return that is?
I have not. It seems to be going up. Last year it was worth about 38, and now it's 46.
What's the face value on it, the death benefit?
The face value is 48, but the death benefit is 113 right now.
So here,
I don't have any heirs.
The challenge, so the challenge we have is that there's so many different nuances in the life insurance policies. Without us actually digging at the policy, it's hard to give a straight answer.
So
my first blush would be, you don't need life insurance to get rid of it.
That would be my first blush to cash
it. But
my second blush would be, lower the face value to $50,000 and turn it into what's called a modified endowment contract.
Because this is back in 89. Interest rates were much higher then.
So some of these policies have these guaranteed interest rates on them that are 3 or 4%.
Or 5%.
And the insurance company can actually offset a little bit about that by changing the cost of insurance.
That sounds like you're talking about universal life policy. But if it's this old whole life policy, who knows how it's structured?
Yeah.
They still have an opportunity to change the
cost of insurance. Yes. But my first inclination is, just cash it in and call it a day.
That was my inclination.
But I don't know.
Because you said
it went from 38 to 46.
And you're sure of that.
That's huge return on a fixed gain. So here's one way I look at it.
But it's been languishing. I mean, for, 89 plus 12 years after that. Been just sitting around doing nothing pretty much.
But you said you only put in $12,000 into it.
Yeah.
But it's worth 46 now.
That doesn't sound languishing.
Right.
I mean, because it's a small amount compared to the $1.8 million, you're not going to see huge numbers on it. I just wonder if I look at this like, do we look at this like a $46,000 bond in your portfolio that's got a higher, here's how I'm viewing it, that has going to have a higher rate of return than any other bond out there. Now, I would never recommend someone go out and buy a life insurance policy today fixed income.
But you already did.
This was a policy in 1989 when rates were much, much higher than today. And some of them had these guarantees in place based because the insurance company thought, you know, it's amazing. You think these actuaries would look at the world differently, but people have a tendency to believe whatever's happening today is going to continue indefinitely. That's how they viewed the world back in 89. Some of these policies have some really high returns left baked into them. And if you've got a 4 or 5% guarantee on this, after the insurance cost, I would not get rid of it. I don't care if you have heirs or not. It might just, because if that 46 is going to keep growing by 5% each year.
Would you lower the face value of the?
If you could. If you could lower the death benefit amount.
If you could lower the death benefit amount, they're going to say, Claudia, it's going to turn it into a modified endowment contract if you lower the death benefit amount. You're going to say, I don't care.
I wouldn't turn it into a modified endowment contract.
Why wouldn't you?
Because it's good, and then I might not, because who knows what changes in the tax law are going to be in the future, or if it's going to be tax-free death benefit. I would not.
No, but it would be tax. Even a mech has a tax-free death benefit.
I know,
benefit,
but she may or may not keep this to her very.
She's got $1.8 million. She's 55 years of age.
Well, here's what the challenge with financial planning sometimes. We don't know the future.
Scott, I just did this with a client that came in with an old life insurance policy. What happens if
you're wrong?
No, I was right.
He shouldn't have taken your advice.
He's never going
to
spend the money.
He needs a financial advisor.
He and his wife are worth millions, and he wanted to cash the policy out.
So it did not matter. I get that.
And
you said no.
I said don't cash the policy out. I said turn it into a modified endowment contract so that it continues to grow.
Well, here's where you need to run the numbers, yes.
So with her, she's got $1.8 million.
So if you could bring the death benefit down to $55,000, it means you're not really paying for any insurance because you have cash in there and you're earning 5%. You'd do that all day long.
Well, and the problem with that is it's just going to make her withdrawal easier. So her withdrawal is going to be taxable versus, but I don't think she'll ever spend this money in her lifetime.
All right, I'm
right.
You're right. I'm wrong.
All right. Thank you. So, Claudia. Sorry, you
wouldn't get rid of
that. Don't get rid of it.
I'm thoroughly confused. Don't get rid of it.
Lower the death benefit.
Now, we're not 100% confident because we don't have the contract in front of us. But based on what you said,
don't get rid of it. Lower the face value of the contract as low as they will let you. Lower it to $55,000. They're going to tell you it's going to turn into a modified endowment contract.
You say fine.
And you say fine. Okay. You say fine.
And then how does that benefit me?
Because it strips the cost of insurance out of the contract, and it lowers your cost so it will grow faster. You don't need the death benefit.
Oh, okay.
You shouldn't have bought it in the first place, but you did buy it.
There now. She might have needed the life insurance then. Still whole life.
I thought I might have needed it. Yeah.
I understand, but lower the face value low as they'll let you. I'd say $55,000, and when they say it's going to turn into a modified endowment contract is what they're going to say, you're going to say, I don't care. Okay? Just like that.
In the same tone that Pat just used.
All right?
All right, I'll do that.
All right, appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks. You know, it's interesting, Pat. Here's an old life insurance policy. I would never recommend someone buy this today. Wouldn't have recommended it back then either.
But she owned it.
She owns it. And some of these old policies, whether they're old life insurance policies or old annuities, sometimes the guarantees in them are high enough where it makes sense to keep them.
Yes.
Now, had she put the money in any other investment, bonds or...
She would have been better off.
But
here
we are.
But she is where she is.
And so when you need to look at what are the alternatives, if we cash this thing out, then where's it going to go? And if we want to look at some guaranteed fixed income, which most people need for some portion of their portfolio, then we would look at this. Why don't we look at this as some portion of her fixed income portfolio?
And then to make it as efficient as possible, that's why you'd lower the face value. But life insurance contracts are sold like, oh, they're simple. They're very complex.
And every company...
Very complicated.
Each policy is different, too. They're really complicated. I think the insurance company likes it that way. All right, well, we need to take a quick break because that's what our station manager tells us what we need to do. And for the podcast listeners, it gives you a chance to stretch out or something. But a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue on with our Stanford Center on Longevity study. And hopefully there's some things that you can pick up for yourself. And we'll take some more calls. So stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
And again, if you want to be a caller on our program, anything financially related, and I find we enjoy taking calls.
Favorite part of the show, actually.
Is it?
Yes. It's the more problem solving.
Yes. Okay. Not dealing with me. That's not a problem.
Well, you're charming.
Okay.
But I prefer talking to someone I don't know.
And is this a normal thing in life? Or just during the show? It's easier when I talk to someone I don't know. That way they don't know me.
It's just easier.
Okay. So, to join the show with a question regarding your financial matter, question on anything related, wondering if you're ready for retirement, or how do you make sure your retirement income is going to last, or how do you reduce your taxes during retirement, or how do I save more for retirement? 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And we're talking about Stanford Center on Longevity, new study, along with the Society of Actuaries, looking at the most important decisions for older middle-income workers. These are the top retirement decisions that older workers are having to face. So this is before we move into retirement.
And there's five of them. The first one we talked about before the break, which is, when do I leave the workforce? The second, which is actually what we find to be true as well, which is deciding when to start Social Security benefits. So when do I start it? When do my spouse start it? Should I defer? Should I take it now? And in fact, I just read a study not too long ago from Office of the Accounting, where they...
Office of Accounting?
What is it? The GOA?
Yeah, GOA, okay.
The GOA, where some, I don't know, $130 million of underpaid benefits to widows because they didn't collect on their spousal benefits and allow theirs to grow. So this came from the General Accounting Office.
Yes, this is a random sample of 50 beneficiaries.
So it's a big question. When do I start Social Security? So shameless plug right now, we do a Social Security workshop, and we do one every year. Last year, it was probably one of our most well-attended workshops. We had over 4,000 people sign up for workshops last year. And this
workshop's really designed for the same thing about the study. These are people, middle-income workers and savers, good savers.
When do I start Social Security?
And by the way, if you've got tens of millions in retirement, take it as soon as you can get it, because there's a good chance that you're going to be phased out based on some means tests in the future.
Yeah, take the Social Security as soon as you can get it.
Middle-income folks, though, people have got, according to the study, $1 million or so in retirement savings is what they defined.
And when do I start it? Am I better off delaying it? It depends on your situation, but we're going to cover that in the five steps to managing your Social Security.
Yeah, so if you got some money saved and you're trying to figure out when's the best time to start Social Security, this week in Sacramento region, we're having this workshop, 75 minutes long. They start at 7 p.m. during the week. 11:15 on Saturday. And we are in Roseville on Tuesday, Sacramento on Wednesday, Auburn on Thursday, Ranch Cordova on Saturday. And then the following week, we are in Denver Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, as well as the Sacramento, San Francisco Bay Area Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So hopefully you'll come to them. But the thing about Social Security, it's kind of complicated.
Yeah, it is. It is extremely complicated, and especially because it causes other dollars, can cause other dollars to be taxed. So the question we always get to, especially with a married couple, is when are you better off delaying or starting now? And a lot of factors go into it. What we find is sometimes people are better off spending down their own dollars and delaying Social Security benefits, assuming they're going to live to a normal life expectancy.
Yeah, which was, according to the study, the third thing is to determine whether to use retirement savings to enable delaying Social Security. So, yeah. Right? So let's say, assume you retire at 65. Just
assume
throwing that out.
Assume you have a normal life expectancy.
Just throw that out there. And you're thinking, I could start Social Security now, or I could wait. Well, if you're 65, and wait till my normal retirement age, 66, maybe 66 in a month or two. Or I could wait till age 70 and receive about 17% more on a monthly basis if I wait. So the more I wait.
But then the shorter the period you're actually getting paid out for. So if you die prematurely, you're not going to recapture those dollars.
Yes, but there are factors in trying to figure out, does it make sense for you to live off some additional retirement savings, kind of a Social Security bridge? Do you use some of your own savings to bridge you until the time when you're sort of having Social Security income?
And the answer is?
It depends.
Sometimes and often.
It often depends?
No.
Every situation.
Sometimes it makes sense and often it does. Sometimes it doesn't, and often it does not. You know what I did see? Off subject a little bit.
I don't know what that meant. Every situation's unique.
Did you see this proposal in the last few weeks where people could decide to use some of their accrued Social Security benefits in the future to pay down student loans? Did you see that?
That sounds like a really bad idea.
It was a terrible idea. It was floated by some congressman
Future Social Security benefits.
Use some of
Isn't
your
Social
future?
Security supposed to be designed as a stopgap, as a safety net for older workers that don't have enough money saved? Isn't that the original intention of Social Security? So what happens when these people that can't pay down their student loans use their money that should be there when they're 70 and 80?
In their 30s and 40s. Yes.
Or 20s.
Yes.
At the time that they're most able to
work.
It's a brilliant idea. That's great. Love that government.
But that's off the subject. We're talking about the Stanford Center on Longevity.
That's right. But you know what? Let's take a break in that and take a couple calls here because we have some people would like to join us. So if you want to join us as well, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to the Bay Area and talk with Nancy. Nancy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. How can we help you?
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, I have a question about collecting on my husband's Social Security. So he passed away about 4 years ago, and he was 13 years older than I am. So I'm currently 57. He retired at 63 and so took whatever percentage that was of his Social Security that you're allowed when you retire at 63. And so I'm curious, when can I start collecting? And, you know, just to be perfectly honest, he worked his entire life and contributed a whole lot more than I have. I've only been working full time for the past 10 years or so. And so I would like to collect on his rather than mine. And my question is, when can I start collecting and what percentage at what age?
You can start at age 60. You can start at age 60.
You can't really be working.
It depends.
Right.
Will you be working at age 60?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
So
after 10 years of full-time work, man, it's been brutal. I'd like to get out of it.
How much do you make, Nancy?
Between 60 and 70.
So $60,000 and $70,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And can you afford to retire at age 60?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. It depends greatly upon how well the stock market continues doing. I have about $300,000 invested, and my home is paid for, and I assume it's probably worth around $220,000. And so with that sort of portfolio, it's not fabulous, so probably not at 60, but I would like to look at 63.
Yeah, so here's the, when if at age 60, if you quit at age 60, you could start
retirement benefits, but you're limited to earn about $18,000 a year, $17,000 a year before you start losing your benefits. So it probably doesn't make sense to say, I'm going to go ahead and quit just so I can collect a survivor benefit.
So so you can.
And that's that limits in play until you reach your normal retirement age.
So here's what, when you look at your situation, you're gonna have to actually do a little bit of financial planning. Here's what scares me is that your income now, you make $60,000 to $70,000 a year. You've been making that for the last 10 years, you said.
Mm-hmm.
Do you save any or how much of that do you save?
I'm putting 20% of that into a 401k.
Okay, so that's $14,000 a year.
And what do you owe on your home?
Zero.
Okay.
Nothing.
Good for you.
And the home you said is worth $220,000?
About that.
And you live in the Bay Area?
No, that's a misnomer. I actually live in in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia.
Because our thing, it said Bay Area.
Yeah, $220,000 No. Your house is worth $220,000 in the Bay Area.
Like, oh, no, I mean, living in a van.
You haven't boarded up?
Okay.
Yeah, no. $220,000 in a suburb of Atlanta is not
bad. The parking place for the van is $220,000. That would
here's what worries me. I think you're not going to be able to retire comfortably until 65, maybe?
Well, 66? I mean, I can do that. I'm just trying to get an idea of...
Look, you could go on the survivor benefit anytime you want until the age 70.
Age 60, yes. At age 60, you can start it. That's
60.
The
answer.
Right, but what percentage of that benefit? I mean, would it
be... It'd be what his benefit was.
It'd be what his was, but you lose a dollar for every dollar you earn.
Above 17,000.
So what happens is if you stay on your job and you get the Social Security benefit on the survivor benefit, you're going to give it all right back.
So the only way to get it is you
have
reduce
to quit.
The work to your $17,000 a year.
But
the longer you wait to go on the survivor benefit, the more the survivor benefit grows. But it's only then at age 70.
And the more money more time you have to accumulate some savings.
So what happens is between the age of 60 and 70, we know you could go on the survivor benefit, right? Or you could go on your own benefit. So you have to do some Social Security planning here as well. So the question is, okay, at age 70, do I stay on my survivor benefit or do I convert over to the Social Security benefit? You have to get an estimate of what your Social Security benefit would be at age 70. You need to do a little bit of financial planning. From first glance, the answer to your question is yes, Nancy, you could start survivor benefit at age 60. Should you?
Yeah, what's that?
I'm not saying I would, but I can. And you're saying is I would get at age 60, I would get whatever he was getting at the time he passed away.
That's right. Well, a little bit of increase because the COLA's over there.
But for every dollar over $17,000, for every
of earnings
$2 you earn, you lose one.
No, I know. I would, but so the idea would be to retire and then get a part-time job someplace, not earning much more than that.
There
so
you
I wouldn't
go.
Lose the benefit.
That
right.
Is. Correct.
And then at the same time, of course, it would have to depend entirely upon whether or not the stock market continues to do well.
I don't like the idea of your retirement based upon the stock market.
Obviously.
Yeah, no. Right. Your $300,000, if you were going to start a distribution from that $300,000 a day, consider it to be about $12,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a 4% distribution on that account.
Given you're pretty young.
And your Social Security benefit. Are
you all in stock in your 401k?
Yes. Not a lot. I mean, that's a pretty conservative plan, but I am, yes, I am in stocks. Because
are you 100% in stocks?
Oh, no, I have.
Okay, all right, good. All right, good, because you've mentioned twice now your retirement dependent upon the stock market. And you need to have a plan in place, Nancy, that your retirement is not dependent upon the next bear market. Because it will come.
Nancy.
Right. It always happens.
It will come. Yes. I know.
Yeah.
I
Nancy,
know.
Yep. You should sit down and do a financial plan, get a financial advisor that actually does a plan. We're going to send you our book, Decision Points.
Okay.
We'll send you our book. Don't plan on retiring until you're at least 65. I'm just telling you flat out.
Right, okay.
We're going to put you on hold and get your information.
We'll put you on hold.
I know this with you. Yeah,
all right. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
And sometimes if you can't stand the job, maybe it might make sense to find another job and push your retirement out. But it's really important that you don't do things in your late 50s or early 60s that can jeopardize your retirement in your 70s or 80s. And it's not you don't want to hit age 75, find yourself in great health still, and you can't afford to leave the house.
Yes.
I mean, it's always this balance, isn't it? Because none of us know how long we're going to live.
I had a guy the other day told me he's on the 30-30 plan.
What's that?
He says, I could live 30 minutes. I could live another 30 years.
Okay.
Like, and? I thought that was interesting.
All right. Well, there's obviously... It's in the financial planning, it is this interesting balance.
Yes.
You're trying to play. And I'll never forget, Pat, this was in the year 2000. Had some clients, they were about age 50, and they wanted to take the maximum they could out of their retirement accounts and start what's called a 72T distribution. And I talked to them about the risk of doing so, and they said, yeah, but we don't know if we're going to live long. We want this opportunity now. We're relatively young. We've got our health, et cetera, et cetera. And so they ended up taking, this is before there were IRS restrictions on how much you can take.
So they wanted to take money out of their plans when they were 50, in their 50s.
They ended up taking out about a 9 or 10% distribution from the start. That wasn't my recommendation, right? Just like someone smokes and goes to the doctor, and the doctor says quit smoking, they keep smoking, right? So wasn't my recommendation. And let's just say it did not turn out well for them.
They spent money before they should have.
Yes, and things went backwards on them. And here are the 50s. That's the prime time for most people when it comes to retirement savings. I think the average person who joins us as a client at Hanson McLean, we have over 7,000 clients that we serve, individuals that we serve. The average age of a new client who joins us is about 58 years old. It's like kind of right getting to that.
It's the sweet spot. It's where you can actually have the best time to save and plan. It's where people really, really dig in. Is in their mid to late 50s on retirement. They've saved.
Kids are now gone.
Right? People save. But then now when it comes into the planning, have I saved enough? Now's the time. Do I need to catch up? What do I need to do right now?
And moving up to the northern part of the country, northwest in Seattle, we're with Neil. Neil, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Oh, good morning.
Hi, Neil.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. How can we help you?
All right. I had a question about selling stock. What can a person do to avoid capital gains?
Well, if you are in a lower, if you sell stock and remain in the 12% federal tax bracket, was 15% last year, or lower, including the gain amount, there is no federal capital gain tax.
The other way is to not have a gain, in which case you don't have to pay capital gains, which isn't desirable.
Right.
So tell us.
Or if you have stock that you've purchased over years, you look for those shares that have the highest cost basis and sell those first.
Or you can gift that stock to a charity if you are gifting any money now. Or you could gift it to a donor advised
fund. What are you trying
fund.
To accomplish?
So tell us your situation.
Okay, I have about $400,000 in Chevron stock passed on from my grandfather to my father and so on and so forth. And I'm a little heavy. It's good stock, I think, but I'd sure like to, I've taken it out of it before, and the capital gains, the capital gains is really, nailed me hard.
When did you inherit it?
Oh, geez, back in the 70s.
You inherited it in the 70s.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's split and so on and so forth. But I'm heavy there. And, one of these days the stock market's going to go down. I'd like to diversify it. Is there any way?
What's your annual income, family income?
Okay. When I don't have capital gains, I'm about $85,000.
And how old are you?
I'm 70.
Did you sell any of the stock last year?
No, I did not. I sold a house.
Okay, so you had other capital gain last year.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of these capital gains.
No. It's always better than a capital loss, Neil.
And you live in the state. And you live in the state of Washington. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
What else do you have as far as stocks or mutual funds or 401ks or IRAs?
Oh, I have about $60,000 in an IRA and about $300,000 in two or three CDs.
So you are really, really, really overweighted in this.
Yeah.
Correct.
You own your home?
Is there any way? Correct. No mortgage.
And you said you had $60,000 in IRAs.
Well, I mean, some you'll pay no federal tax on, and then the maximum, then you'll be some at 15%. I tell you what.
Correct.
15%.
Oh, listen, this
doesn't take much swing in the market to raise 15%.
Yep. This is, you are, well, you've been through this, so you've owned it for long enough that there were points in time that you said, what, why do I own this thing, right? You've lived through it.
Well, you know, I probably never need it, but, I'm trying to, I still think it would be at some point wise to try to diversify a little.
Oh, but there's no question. I would. I got to tell you, I would unload one half to three quarters of this, and pay the capital gain. And unless you're gifting money to charities, you could actually put some of these. You could gift them to a donor advised fund and then avoid the capital gain. But I would think nothing of. Nothing of selling half to three quarters of this right now.
And it's high right now.
I would think nothing of selling half to three quarters and paying the capital gain and saying, I hate paying capital gains and darn that government.
I mean, it's up about 30% in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
That's correct. Correct.
So let's sell it and pretend like it's only up 15% in the last 6 months.
And be happy and not worry about it. And then start taking some income out of that whole portfolio. Maybe I'd start sending you $10,000, $12,000, $16,000 a year.
You know, it's interesting, Neil. I can't tell you how many times over the years, but we've been doing this a long time, financial advisor, where people have been reluctant to diversify some asset, whether it's a stock or it's a house that they want to sell, but they don't want to pay the capital gain tax. Well, I don't want to pay the capital gain taxes. Then the market turns.
Yeah.
And particularly when you're looking at an individual company, you're not talking about an S&P 500 fund. You're talking about one company.
Yeah.
Right.
And I tell you what, you never know what happens,
and
right?
I have seen it go down to 70. Almost, so I know it can drop. So.
And it can drop. I tell you, here's a nice stable company, and I know the arguments particularly for companies like
Chevron.
So was
Sears. So was Sears.
Yeah.
So was Sears.
Correct. Well, one last question. I know you guys let you go here. So there is no such thing as buying like stock.
No.
Like real estate.
Wash. There's no wash. Unfortunately,
no
the real estate
free,
people still
no
have.
No tax.
And I think because Trump was the leading the administration, the tax law still enables the real estate folks
which is,
to have.
Which is a crazy thing. But Neil, let's just.
But
let's ask
yourself. Hold on.
Ask yourself this though: if you met with me the first time and I said, "Oh, Neil, you've got $85,000 a year in income and you have $460,000 to invest," I think it'd be a good idea to buy $400,000 in one company stock.
Nah.
Right.
I'll pass. I'll go
you live in a tax-free state.
You live in a tax-free state. I would get, I got to tell you,
Neil,
I would get rid of three quarters of this and pay the tax.
You never, when it's one individual company, here's a story. We're in our offices in California, prime headquarters. We have offices in other states, but our primary office is California.
Right.
California, you know, we were hit by the fires last year. So in Northern California, the main utility company, Pacific Gas and Electric, is being blamed for those fires, or at least someone's trying to blame them. Their stock, and the number's not quite perfect, their stock went from about $80 a share, maybe it was $70 a share, to $40 a share overnight.
Yeah.
And here's a utility company. Bevin makes the arguments why these are safe and stable. Then we saw the similar thing happen in Southern California when there were more fires against the
Southern California Edison.
So you, some tomorrow there's some spill from Chevron.
Well, it gets better. The city of New York is suing the oil companies for a global warming and the rise of the water.
Well, they're suing everybody. That attorney general is whacked out.
Anyway, that's our opinion, Neil.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. You know, it's a little clear. It's nice to get another opinion. In fact, my plan is to visit one of your offices sooner than later.
All right. Well,
thanks. You have a great show, and I like listening to you guys.
What do you? Out of curiosity, Neil, where do you listen to us from?
Actually, Cairo. Was it 97.3?
All right.
Seattle.
Good.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Glad you called. Thanks. And continuing with this study, we started the program off. This Stanford Center on Longevity did a study with Society of Actuaries, looking at the
five things that middle-income workers going into retirement are most worried about, the areas where the decisions are the toughest. The first three we've covered already, which was when do you leave the workforce, and do you leave it full-time or part-time? When do you start Social Security? Are you better off delaying Social Security benefits and using your own money? The fourth thing, which is managing and reducing your living expenses, housing, transportation, and medical costs.
Yeah.
Remember, we're a big fan of paying off your homes prior to retirement.
Just makes, it's a, for most people, it's the biggest check each month.
Prior to retirement.
They hit retirement, if you don't have that big expense.
If you can't pay your home off prior to retirement, then oftentimes what you're looking for is to manage your cash flow. You want the smallest house payment possible, which means you want the longest, you may want the longest mortgage possible.
But really it comes down to how do you figure out how do you reduce those living expenses and how do you manage them? Because now you have a lot of time to spend money as well. And the final thing in this study is deciding whether to move or how to tap into the home equity to help finance that retirement.
Either using a second mortgage, a brand new first mortgage, or a reverse mortgage.
And we're seeing more and more people, particularly in high-cost states, high-taxed, high-cost states. For many, are just saying this doesn't make sense. That, or you've been in a really expensive area. Maybe you're in the San Jose area. You think, I move 100 miles away and I can...
You know what, Scott? Oftentimes they're moving to get closer to the children that couldn't afford to live where they grew up.
Well, a key factor in deciding where to move is what relationships are going to be around. What relationships are you leaving behind, and what relationships are going to be there for when you move? And as people who've helped people transition retirement for this many years, 20-some-odd years, we see that that interaction with your family and with loved ones is actually more important than your finances in retirement. Because if you don't have that kind of...
Yeah, if you don't have that social interaction, the money doesn't much matter.
Anyway, so we are out of time, unfortunately. Again, we've got, beginning this week, our Social Security workshops. If you want to attend, go to HansonMcLean.com. Hanson McLean will have all of the details, and looking forward to seeing you there this week. For the rest of you, we'll have a great rest of the weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean, Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.